Welcome to Living the Life in Tech, a weekly podcast series with CIOs, CISOs, and technology leaders that are sculpting the current tech landscape. Each episode, we aim to provide deep insights from our guests, covering off areas that include leadership, innovation, security, and technology that will assist you and your team in evolving your business. If you enjoy this episode of the podcast, we would love you to provide us with a rating on iTunes or any other source you may be using, along with subscribing to the podcast so you don't miss a thing. We also encourage you to subscribe to our weekly newsletter at ciotechasia.com.
Yes, hello and welcome to another episode of Living the Life in Tech. My name is Tyrone McGuigan and I'm the CEO of CIO Tech Asia, where today I'm joined by Mr. Damien Scalzo, who's the Chief Information Officer at Mercedes-Benz Financial Services in Australia. So, Damien, great to have you join the show today. And no doubt if you are an F1 enthusiast like myself, you're counting down the days until those silver arrows get to race around the track again.
Yes, thanks for having me. And yes, no doubt. Looking forward to seeing them go one and two again shortly.
Yeah, absolutely. But Damien, I might just get you to start off today's show just by providing our listeners with an overview around who Mercedes-Benz Financial Services are and what your overall responsibility is within the company.
Sure, no problem. Yep. So Mercedes-Benz Financial Services Australia. So we look after the financing of all Mercedes vehicles, whether that be a car, van, truck or bus through the dealerships, the dealer network in Australia. In terms of my responsibilities, I look after the tech landscape, pretty much starting from the strategy to the build, the run, and also the team management across that for Australia and New Zealand. So anything, if you're financing a car through us, it will go through our back-end systems. If you're inquiring for a quote, it'll go through our systems as well.
Now, Damien, I'm constantly reading articles and listening to different interviews from CIOs around the globe on what they feel the biggest enterprise technology trends are right now. And unfortunately, what I keep hearing are the same four areas coming up: artificial intelligence, digital transformation, cybersecurity, and Internet of Things. So the fact is, I've heard arguments made that, you know, each of these is the biggest trend right now. And I'm sure there are other trends, obviously not mentioned, that could lay claim to that title as well. So I'm not trying to say these trends aren't important. However, I bring this up to highlight an important point. We are going through a fundamental shift in technology right now. So what I wanted to ask you is can you remember a time when we've had so many disruptive technologies converging on the business world at the same time?
Yeah, look, I mean, from my perspective, I think technology growth has always been exponential year on year. And I think from my perspective, where I saw this play out previously would have been around the dot-com boom and the Y2K, so the late 90s. And I think back then, it probably wasn't in the media as much, or it wasn't as hyped up, or even seeing a lot of resource requirements for these things as much as we're flooded with them now. Because I think back then the fundamental difference was what was fueling this growth. And the fuel back then was basically, it was not like today where we have low barriers to entry into the software market. Is right back then it was very high. So you only had high barriers in that you only had the IBMs and the Oracles that could provide services to customers. So in this growth period, there was a constraint by which only the big boys in town could provide software, and you had to pick between the top four or the top five, depending on what particular software package you're looking for. Whereas now you pretty much it's a free reign for anyone, you know, two people in their garage or two people that are having a beer and after work and thinking of something that they want to achieve that they can't do in their current job. So that startup industry is really disrupting, and why it's disrupting now and why I don't believe it was disrupting as much back in the late 90s was because the barrier to entry is really just, I need a website, I need AWS or Azure, and off I go. Whereas back then you wanted a website, it was, you know, you could be anywhere between $1,000 to $10,000 depending on what you wanted, maybe $500,000 to $1 million for an e-com site, whereas all this now is software as a service. So it really has changed the game with that low barrier to entry.
And when I mentioned some of those trends just earlier, how does a CIO deal with all these competing trends, and, you know, which one should they pick?
My stance on the trends is not that they're not trends that aren't important that CIOs should be fully aware of and invest time in understanding how they can use them to bring customers to their organization, but I think they should first challenge is pick the trend that actually you can champion and deliver something that will deliver more customers or more efficiencies to the company. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that sometimes talk about, I'm going to bring a big data platform into my company, and therefore that's going to channel these efficiencies or bring this data, these customers that we didn't have before. That could be true, but I would look at it, I would flip it upside down and say, what is it out there that actually will bring customers to me? And I think that's why you see the startups have been so successful, because they have the luxury of a clean slate of paper. They can actually go, okay, I will create a product by researching truly what my customer wants. So I'm going to find my target customer. I'm going to interview them and ask them what they want. And if you ask someone what they want and you give them what they want, most likely they're going to take it. And I think what sometimes the corporates get caught up in is getting lost in all of these really cool, don't get me wrong, enterprise technologies that really can bring efficiencies in customers, but not solving the problem for the customer first. So for me, they really should understand what it is the customer wants, and does that enterprise technology or that trend bring the customer on board with it, then let's go for it.
Yeah, I mean, there's some interesting stuff there that you mentioned. And I mean, again, when you're looking at trends, you know, depending on the customer and the industry, for example, like big data or analytics is only useful if, you know, you have good data foundations, or it enables you to extract meaningful information.
Exactly.
And it enables you to understand what the customer actually wants itself. But the modern CIO and the IT leader, I mean, these tech changes present both opportunities and challenges. So as a technology plays an increasingly important role in the business, the CIOs and IT leaders have the opportunity now to, I suppose, deliver more business value than ever. So successful CIOs are those that recognize and adapt to these evolving challenges. So what are these challenges, and what areas must the CIOs be prepared to address in the coming year? So what I wanted to do is explore this topic further with you and actually talk about four important challenges I believe CIOs are currently faced with in 2020. So the first one is around finding and retaining talent. How bad is it?
I think it's probably more now than ever a game of you get what you put in. So if you really invest the time in this process of finding talent and retaining the talent, then it's not actually that bad. I think it's, as long as you don't look at it from the, you know, there's always the easy option of looking at it from a 6-month view of, I need a resource to fill this gap. And that will become a 6-month problem for you. So where you have to find out, the resource doesn't actually go anywhere after this, or it doesn't complement my team, or it doesn't work with the culture in the team. So I think the major challenge, one part, is investing the time. And for me, I've always liked to be part of the interview process, no matter how junior the person is on the team. If I can just be part of it in some small form, just to determine how that person would fit into my team and how their personality and attitude would complement the team. It might actually gel well with the team, or it might actually challenge the team. And I think assessing that either by interview or observation is one of the things I do to overcome the challenge of maybe not finding the right talent. But then you look at other things, like there's the salary debate at the moment around, you know, so if you take out the pandemic at the moment, take out COVID, there's always been that challenge around that tech staff are now beginning to name the price. So, and if they have a good CV with some good deliveries on there and they have the qualifications and they can prove that in an interview, generally they name their price. And that becomes a challenge for the CIO when you're having to do a transformation. And I think the only real chip you have up your sleeve, or card if you like, is that if you can make sure that your role that you're offering overlaps with what the job seeker's after. So what I mean by that is, there's sometimes in an interview process, you can determine that you can get the skills out of this person to fulfill the role, and that ticks all the boxes. But can you overlap with what they want to achieve in their career, and they see it as a growth path? They're likely to put less emphasis on the salary because they see it as actually the next step for them and something that they get more out of it than just a paycheck at the end of the day. And some companies can leverage this off their brand. Some of it can leverage it off the particular type of project or technology that they're implementing that, you know, is really of interest to the candidate. But I think that's one way you can address the challenge.
Some interesting points there that you did raise as well. I mean, addressing the actual challenge itself. And like you said, now One of the interesting things is with these CVs that, so, you know, if they've got a strong CV or they've delivered a couple of strong projects, they can literally name their price. And the way things are going on at the moment with COVID-19, there are a lot of opportunities out. There's a lot of people out there in the marketplace at the moment that are good and have been let go for whatever reason. So it is making it more difficult for people like yourself, I suppose, to be able to, you know, pinpoint the correct people to work with the team itself. The next point I wanted to cover was cultivating innovation. So how can CIOs drive consistent innovation while keeping up with business demand or while using their existing resources, Damien?
Yeah, this is a good question, and it's always been a challenge of focusing that BAU with your transformation. So, you know, transformations aren't anything new, and obviously business as usual is not anything new. Where the train runs off the rails is where you try to get the BAU team to do the transformation, or you realize that there's not enough resourcing to do that, and you say, it's okay, I'll get another team to do the transformation, and you don't involve the BAU team. So for me, these are the two quick ways to derail your transformation. And unfortunately, that's the road some people go down simply because they don't have any other options. And I guess companies don't always have the luxury of having a, you know, endless pay checkbook that they can spend on resourcing. And that's fair enough. And particularly this year will be a challenge for everyone. So, you know, if your budget can't allow for an additional transformation team, my way to address that challenge would be pick your key SMEs in your BAU team and look at augmenting them into the transformation team. So that knowledge goes in and that knowledge comes back. If you can do that, that's at least one safeguard to make your transformation go at least on the flame of, you know, what's going on the transformation, and you know that legacy is being at least considered and understood in the migration process, and the people coming back to run that transformation technology actually know how to run it. Another thing you can do is, obviously, you can delay the transformation's timeline by challenging the scope. And what I mean by this is, coming back to my thoughts earlier, is that an enterprise technology offering doesn't necessarily always bring customers. So challenge that scope of why you're implementing all of these technology offerings, and pick the ones that are actually going to bring customers and revenue or true efficiencies to the table, and maybe downscale the others so you can actually do some of them in tandem. That would be my two suggestions on how to counter that challenge.
So when we talk about that, with your experience previously, how important is getting obviously the buy-in from the entire leadership team to buy into these kind of changes within the business?
It's about having that critical conversation around what the impact is. A leadership team will always understand a reservation in going forward with something if they understand the impact. So if the impact's put to them simply about what that transformation would look like at the end if it's not run properly, or if it's staffed by just BAU people, or if it's not staffed with any BAU people, I think explaining the challenges around what you might end up with in the company at the end and what that transformation might look like and the result of it, I think can help you win the challenge of maybe them not wanting to go down that road.
Yeah. Now, the other challenge I'm seeing at the moment coming up a lot is protecting against a growing ransomware threat. So CIOs, CISOs, how are they addressing this challenge?
In a COVID situation, fraud and attacks will go up. It's the perfect time to actually launch your attack, unfortunately. And I think the best way of doing this is, my view on security and actually protecting the landscape and protecting the companies always starts with spreading the awareness. And the reason I say this is critical is because by spreading the awareness, your endpoint, which is actually your user, that's the person confronted with this email or this phishing attack, they will be better educated into how to actually react when they confronted with that. I think you need to balance that with the technology side of locking everything down to a point where it's constraining your end users. Mm-hmm. So your end users are the ones that are daily at threats. The people in IT are not really at threat because they live and breathe what's secure and what's not secure, and they know just from experience what emails to open and what not. So really you need to focus on arming the education and awareness on the end users.
And then, you know, how do you put that education across to them? Where do you stop? Where do you start?
Yeah, look, it could be as simple as training programs, but then again, you know, compliance training programs don't really get everyone's attention. So it could be games that you play that teach people about you know, ransomware or cybersecurity attacks where there's prizes involved. Gamification always helps with security. Look, it is a bit of a dry topic, but it's a critical topic that we need to take seriously. But another one that works is sometimes doing social engineering. So whether that be actually planned phishing attacks where you check how many people actually do fall for the trick that's not a real phishing attack. And that can be used not as a threat back to your end users, but as an educational process to say, you know, look, 20% of the staff clicked on this link. And if you had, this is what would have happened. So it gives them the impact again. So they understand the impact of their actions and they understand how they could have avoided that. And I think most users that I've worked with on the front line are really happy to do anything you ask them to, as long as you give them a mechanism to work. So if you say, look, if you use this secure page and it's not any slower or it's faster, even better than what they do at the current time in their system, they'll use it. But if you give them something that's archaic and, you know, a million passwords that they're not going to remember, then eventually the resistance will creep in.
Yeah, yeah. And the last one I wanted to cover off today was around balancing governance with self-service. So I know obviously CIOs at the moment balancing security and governance with self-service, but you know, how can they obviously do this? And I suppose what is the answer for CIOs in addressing this issue?
It's a tricky one. Look, it can be done. You can create security and governance as a self-service if you have a strong team under you or a strong organization that has a strong awareness of security risks. And I think if I look at the example of, there's many projects in financial services, particularly in the banking industry, where they have very strict and detailed regulatory requirements, and projects are able to navigate them quite easily. So there would be no reason why a project that's not given the right information couldn't self-navigate their way through cyber risk assessments and cyber threats.
And with the answers, obviously, for CIOs in addressing the issue itself, I know there's a couple of areas. Obviously, one, to learn to accept risk and be pragmatic, but also understanding that you'll be breached at some time. So really be prepared to react. So how you react might be more important than your defense, as it could limit the impact of the attack. But where do you see kind of the key areas falling under that play?
I think it comes back to having a robust model in, a framework in place that actually doesn't slow down your delivery cycle and then your operating cycle as well. So your DevOps model needs, you can't have a waterfall security model in place for DevOps. But I think when it comes down to the CIO, they really need to be prepared to react, as you say. And in being prepared to react, that can sometimes be even more important than the way in which they defend. Because if you look at a lot of the breaches that have happened that are in the press, if they could have reacted faster, or how they reacted to the customer base that was affected, probably was more important than the fact that they were breached.
And finishing things up, Damien, then, what do you feel are the biggest game changers then really within the industry over the next 5 to 10 years? We've covered a few of them off today, but you know, there are consistently new stuff coming out all the time, new tech hitting the market. What are your thoughts over the next 5 to 10?
Yeah, look, the one that's probably not getting spoken about too much is probably the immersive workspace. And I think COVID probably brings that one to life a little bit, in that, do we really need 10 floors of an office space and 100 square meters or whatever it is for your staff? So you've already got the breakout now of people using shared collab spaces. You know, the startups have been doing that for years. But maybe there is a case that in the future that you might have a headset in your living room, like a 3D headset that you put on, and goggles, and you actually can work faster and better and more efficiently than being in the office and communicate with people all over the globe. So I think that's a space that we'll see more of in the coming years. Yeah. And I think now, out of COVID and working from home, that might actually be more accepted.
Yeah.
Obviously,
it's an interesting one, isn't it? And like you said as well, with everything that's going on at the moment, I mean, I think more and more, employers are actually seeing that the benefit of that, and can see the money that's, you know, the cost savings there behind it as well. So I think,
exactly.
But it'll be a very interesting place that we live when you know, if that is the case, and we're kind of got VR, you know, with a virtual office where we're all around it as well, it'd be quite cool to see.
Yeah. And then the other ones that I think, you know, we've heard of, but maybe could really change the game in terms of security, would be quantum computing, because from what I understand about quantum computing, it will put at risk a lot of our public and private keys that we have out there. So that could be a game changer, not only for actually processing times, but also might flip security on its head a little bit. if I was looking forward into other ones, probably the one that I think will really be the game changer for the customer will be that a kind of Web 3.0 where you have services rather than apps and websites that you go to. And I think the open banking one is a good use case in that area where the customer is really in the driver's seat and the bank's really at the mercy of the customer. So today, if a friend of yours has an interest rate which is 0.5% better than yours, that, you know, the process that would go through your head to understand, right, I'd have to refinance, I'd have to fill out this piece of paper, I'd have to go speak to this person, I'd have to get this document. It's just, it's too much and the customer isn't in control. But if the customer in an open banking situation can push a button and move from one bank to another almost seamlessly, to me, I think that's a massive game changer. And if that plays out into utilities in all different services you consume, where if you're not happy as a customer, you can click a button and move, I think that will be something that will really change the market.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, Damien, thanks for joining us today. Some fantastic insights there around some of the trends and also the challenges that a lot of CIOs are currently facing. Obviously, there's a lot more challenges that CIOs are facing on a day-to-day basis, and we've only covered a very small section of them. But you know, based on your insights and you know, where you see obviously the technology market heading in the years to come as well, you know, there's definitely some exciting times ahead for everyone to be in the tech space at the moment. And it'll be interesting to see where this world ends up in another 5 to 10 years and what changes have been made. So I know one last thing before we do go as well. I know I did mention before, obviously, you're an F1 enthusiast, but you're also into photography and drones. How has that been going from the drone side? Because, you know, I'm seeing more and more people now kind of get making this as part of what, you know, their day-to-day hobbies. So how does that work?
Yeah, look, I got into photography and then when I realized you can just get a motorized machine to take a photo further up, I thought, that's it, I've got to get one of them. And I think, you know, look, they can really be beneficial for photography, and of course they can be a nuisance as well if not used correctly. I think the security topic with drones is amazes me what a unit on a Wi-Fi protocol, how far it can go without someone actually being next to it is just amazing, and how it can stand up in sort of winds next to a beach. I really think, you know, the whole model of Amazon delivering to your house and people getting food deliveries to their house, I think we'll see that come in the future if they can lock it down in a way in which it's safe to the end consumer. But for me, I'm just really blown away by just how much technology is in such a little device.
Mm. I know that Guzman Gomez, they've started that now as well with the delivery. I don't know where they've done it, but they have done it in a couple of places in Australia, I believe. So I'm not too sure how that is kind of kicked off, but you know, I know they did do that sort of last year. They were kind of one of the first to start the whole delivery process with it. So could be some cold or warm tacos, who knows what you'd end up with. But anyway,
there's plenty of use cases, even the safety use case of, you know, in a bushfire or in search and rescue, they can use thermal cameras to go a lot faster than someone on foot would go and cover a lot more area. So there really are quite a lot of smart tech in those little units.
Well, Damien, thank you so much for your time. And I wish you all the very best for the remainder of the year and getting through this pandemic that we're all living through at the moment. So hopefully you and the family are safe. And no doubt I will be having a further chat with you in another 12 months' time to sort of see where things are headed and go from there.
Thank you so much. Keep safe, and thank you for having me on your program.
Thanks, David. Take care.